Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. It's like a party in here already. For the 2019 Pulitzer Prize-winning drama Fairview by Jackie Sibley's jury, it was called... Let me start this again. You ladies have me laughing so much. I messed up your introduction. Let's start this again. The 2019 Pulitzer Prize in Drama went to Fairview by Jackie Sibley's jury for being, quote, a hard-hitting drama that examines race in a highly conceptual, layered structure, ultimately bringing audiences into the actors' community to face deep-seated prejudices. The audience watches the Frasier family in its living room as family members prepare for a birthday party. Heather Alicia Sims plays Beverly. Hi, Heather.
Hi.
She's hosting the night. She needs it all to be just really perfect. But the silverware isn't right, and her sister's sort of condescending, and her brother might not show up, and then her daughter's just this typical teenager. The night, which begins as a family drama, unfolds into a poignant examination of race and privilege in America. Jackie and Heather in studio with me, along with director Sarah Benson. Welcome to All of It.
Thank you.
Yeah, hold conversation going before the mics went on. So Jackie and Sarah, you met at a writer's lab, right? Is that correct?
I think that's true.
Yeah. I think, Sarah runs a theater called Soho Rep. And they
heard of it.
Yeah, it's a pretty great theater, if I do say so myself. And she does a good job running it. And now I'm going to stop kissing up to her because it's weird. But they have a writer-director lab to help young writers and directors make material, and that was, I think, the first time that we met.
And when did you start collaborating on this project?
I think it was like 3 years ago, I want to say. Yeah.
And what did you have your script written? What was the evolution of it?
Oh, I wish I'd had my script written. Mm-hmm. We started very much from just like conversation and ideas. Sarah and I and the set designer Mimi Lian, who's also fantastic. Mm-hmm. Sort of met every once in a while and read books and talked about different ways of thinking about surveillance and the white gaze. And eventually this weird comic script was created, or a draft of it, out of those conversations. And then we workshopped it with actors like Heather, mm-hmm. and sort of put this whole crazy mess together.
That's so interesting. It was just that organic, that it came out of conversations and ideas. I don't know, is that the norm? For you? Is that the way you like to work, Sarah?
I mean, I feel like the sort of no norm, in a way. Each writer is so extremely different. But I feel like Jackie works with sort of every aspect of the theater in this very kind of holistic way. Mm-hmm. She's like a conceptual artist and is thinking about like the intersection of like all of the aspects of the theater apparatus at the same moment. And so it makes a lot of sense that it sort of came together through a design conversation, too. I think that was a huge part of us starting to figure out the dramaturgy of this piece.
Right. Without giving too much, we're going to try to talk about this without giving too much away. But as you mentioned, the set very much informs the things that we start to understand about the story.
Carefully said. Thank you.
Working hard on this one is making me sweat. Okay. So Heather, what were your first thoughts when you read this script? You see this family, they're trying to get dinner together, but you know something's coming.
Well, I mean, when you live in a house, you know, specifically a house, there are things that can be hidden. And so you have to imagine what, you know, given the set that we have, what this home looks like and what's hidden behind the walls. And so it's been really exciting, you know, to see how the audience unpacks what we have hidden inside, mm-hmm. of this home and what comes to the forefront, what comes into our living room. Because most people, when you go into a home for the first time, you don't go past the living room or, you know, or maybe even the kitchen.
Your character, Beverly, wants everything to be so right. Did you know Beverly's growing up?
Yes. You know, my mom was somewhat of a Beverly.
I recognize my mom as Beverly.
Yes.
I have to say.
There was something that I wanted to do. I wanted to watch them eat, because that's what my mother used to do. She would make this food and she would take pleasure in watching people eat. And that's, you know, the pride of saying, you know what, I'm giving a part of myself and my soul and my love to my family. And so wanting the feedback that this is great. And, you know, Beverly doesn't always get the kind of feedback that she's looking for.
Well, we as the audience, when we see this setup, it's set up like the old school three camera sitcom. It's a living room we would recognize from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It's an upper middle class family getting ready to have this meal, this birthday party. What kind of conversation did you have with Mimi about what you wanted the set to telegraph to us, the audience?
We talked a lot about the sort of conventional theater expectations, I think. I remember we definitely referenced the sort of Sam French setup that, you know, has the sort of architecture of like 45 degree walls that like would never exist in an actual space, but are that are like theater convenient. So we all sort of found that we had to like do the thing as artists that we like usually would run a mile from, in terms of leaning into conventions and cliches that are both troubling and upsetting, and also to sort of use the theater going apparatus as part of the design of the piece.
Jackie, as you were writing the play, did you know which stereotypes you wanted to go after?
Oh, yeah. I think that as we were sort of putting it together, we were thinking a lot about different ways that we imagine each other, I guess, would be the best way to talk about it. Like, we definitely were, at least in terms of sort of putting the family forward, this like African-American upper middle class family, we definitely wanted to reference pop culture and different ways of that kind of person exists in like the popular imagination. And then we definitely wanted to also play with different concepts of blackness that also rest in specifically the like white imagination of like of this experience, this way that people that white people sometimes feel as though they're experts in blackness because they have absorbed so much pop culture, and that they project those images onto other people.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You kind of immediately pick up the tropes and the stereotypes, and then they become increasingly uncomfortable. You know, they go from being the, I recognize that, to like, oh, I recognize that. I really, really recognize that. And it was something that reminded me of the New York Times review, which said, called the play Dazzling and Ruthless. If you see it and you must, you will not be comfortable. Did you go into it with that idea that you might cause discomfort?
I think we didn't like shy away from discomfort, but I don't know if that was like the primary objective. I think that we were
trying. You're not a sadist.
No. We're not trying to like torture people or anything. I feel like we were just trying to be rigorous and honest about things that the ways that people talk in private rooms, the ways that people observe each other. And so we we weren't trying to make people uncomfortable necessarily, but we didn't want to pull any punches in making observations about the way that we treat each other as a society. And also, when you're the most honest, also sometimes things are the most funny. So we were also trying to run that line of observation and a little bit of letting the audience in on the observations so that they can take it in, I guess.
For you, Heather, as an actress, you know, there is, it's this comedy, but also this sourness at the same time.
Right.
When you were working on your character, how did you find sort of your equilibrium in that?
Well, so it's funny because the medium is theater. And sometimes I felt like, okay, is this landing in sitcom land, you know? Mm-hmm. And we did have some references like, you know, Family Matters and Fresh Prince and all of that. But trying to figure out, you know, who Beverly is in terms of this particular family, it has been a balancing act. And I've been, you know, I'm constantly reevaluating who she is and how, what she means to the family.
My guests are Jacquelee Sibley-Drury, Sarah Benson, and Heather Alicia Sims. We are talking about Fairview, which is currently playing at the theater for a new audience. It's been extended. I'm interested about the choreography, Sarah. There's just a lot of movement going on in this, and it both seems very natural and it seems extremely deliberate. What is the role of choreography in a play?
I cannot talk enough about the, you know, the show is basically a piece of dance theater. The entire second act is a giant piece of dance theater created by Raja Feather Kelly, who's the choreographer on the piece, and was a huge part of the collaborative team and thinking as we evolve the structure and ideas of the piece. So I feel like, his work is... so interested in looking at popular culture and the creation of popular culture, and also looking at blackness in performance and blackness in dance. And I feel like all of those questions he has really put at the center of how people move in the piece. And he talks about his work in terms of behavior. And I think that that's something to just say, because there's sort of micro and macro moments of choreography happening all the time in the piece. So his work is in all of these small moments in the piece, as well as in the more, obvious like social dance moments that show up. But I think he's interested in looking at, the micro kind of pedestrian choreography, as well as like unison movement.
And for our listeners, one of the reasons it's so important is in the, won't give me a third act, but in the second act, there are voices. It's almost like it almost these days sounds like a podcast in a way, where the actors, the black actors on stage, are going through basically the first act again while there's this commentary going on. There's a French woman, and then there's all these different voices are also archetypes. You can sort of like key into who this person might be. When you were writing it, to me it seems like archetypes. Were they to you when you were writing it, Jackie, these voices we hear?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And there's something that I think we were all curious about how you make a judgment about who you think those people are based on their voice. Like, you sort of assume their race, you assume their gender, you assume their sexual orientation. And that's something that we do all the time, which is just an interesting thing. And there's also, you get clues of it because they're having the kind of conversation that you would imagine, or I would imagine, I guess, that some, a version of a conversation that white people would have in a room without any people of color present. But there are definitely different archetypes in the way that they think about race and different sort of arguments that we make societally about conceptions of how we think about race.
And also, it's interesting, I was just actually checking myself as I was asking you that question, because I realized one of the voices to me sounded like a gay man. And I thought, well, but that's me making that assumption based on what he said. But maybe he's not a gay man. So maybe I need to check myself, you know?
It's sort of so interesting. Complicated. Yeah, no. And I think that we were like thinking about that in rehearsals. We're thinking about that in casting, like trying to figure out the way, like how all of it is very thorny. And but we were excited to just sort of present it and try to talk about it openly rather than being afraid to sort of mention people's identities.
What have the audiences been like? Because you ask things of the audience. Let's just say that. The audience is needs to be prepared, right? And I'm not sure people are necessarily prepared for how big it gets.
Yeah, I don't think that people can prepare for this play, you know, because it's a real collaboration, you know, and so people come in, a lot of people come in and have not read the reviews and don't know what to expect.
And a lot of the reviewers are being really good about trying not to make a spoiler.
Right.
You know, not trying not to. I'm trying really hard.
Right. And thank you. But, you know, because it feels like this huge collaboration between the audience and the actors, it's always a surprise. It's always a surprise, especially at the end, what people are willing to do, you know, and how they're willing to embrace it or not.
Go ahead, Sarah.
Yeah, I would just, you know, amplify that and, you know, and say that I think there's like as many, there's as many audience responses as there are people, as is always the case, but I think that this play just like makes that explicit in a way that a lot, you know, that most theater going experiences, that's not activated in such a visible way as it is in this piece.
Do you eavesdrop at all on the audience? Have you, and what have you heard?
Oh, I feel like the audience eavesdrops on the audience. Like, there's a lot of...
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's like part of the experience, or like that's like, I mean, I think we all do that in any play that we go to see, just as like theater folk. You like go and you watch the audience and see how people are responding to things, but we try to make that be a part of the play. It's always, we were just talking about that in the green room before coming on, like it's always really different. People, sometimes when someone has a big and particular laugh early on in the show, it sort of gives everyone else permission to laugh.
Yeah.
Sometimes if it's quiet, then other people don't feel like they can make verbal responses to the show. So it all, sometimes people laugh, sometimes they leave, sometimes they cry. It sort of seems like it's all over the place in a really good way, hopefully. Yeah.
My guests are playwright Jackie Sibley's Drury, director Sarah Benson, and actor Heather Alicia Sims. We are talking about Fairview, which is being presented by the theater for a new audience. Sarah, as a director, what did you get to do with this play that you haven't gotten to do before?
I mean, I feel like the play is truly like an anthropology experiment as well as a piece of theater. And so I feel like, you know, in the workshopping of it and then now in the performance, I feel sort of like it's this ongoing, it's this ongoing anthropology experiment. That's the best way I can say it.
What was hard for you though as a director when you really had, like, what was a thorny challenge?
I mean, I think that, I think in a way, just conceptually trying to sort of find our way through the piece and find that architecture was like the most exciting and also, you know, the most challenging. I think...
Because you sort of know where you're starting and you know where you want to end with this. It's like, well, what do you do in the middle? I think would be really... like sort of a chunky challenge.
Right. So I think that was sort of, you know, where we spent the most time in development was sort of finding our path through that. I've had a lot of conversations, especially with white people, because I'm white, people I think are very frank with me about their responses at the end.
Oh, that's
interesting. Some of those conversations have been, you know, everything from like incredible to like horrific and everything in between. So that's also been that's been challenging and something that, you know, you don't normally get to do around a play is have explicit conversations.
Jackie, where were you when you found out you won a Pulitzer?
Oh yeah, I was it was after having lunch with a friend and I got a bunch of text messages, basically, because they do a public announcement, but they don't tell you ahead of time. So I was like, I was on Sixth Avenue, basically. It was great. It was like 3 p.m., I think.
You may not know this yet, but this it's a huge honor. What kind of opportunities do you think it's going to create for you? And has it created any yet?
I don't know, but it's a huge honor. It's sort of overwhelming to think about, and I think that like at least at this moment, it's exciting to think that maybe some people that wouldn't have heard of our work are going to come and see our play, and like that is like immediately the thing that's the most exciting to me. is like, because the script that won the award was I spent a lot of time with it, but so did everyone else that's working on the production, and so it does feel like a joint effort and like a collaboration, and so it's exciting to me personally that more people are going to get to see the version of it that created the script.
That's really, and also I think just a wider audience.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And you might get people in, to your point, Heather, that didn't necessarily know what they were coming to see.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, which is exciting.
Yeah.
My guests have been playwright Jackie Sibley's jury, director Sarah Benson, and featured actor Heather Alicia Sims. We've been talking about the play Fairview, and we didn't give anything away. That tired me out. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.
So much.
Coming up next, Lily Chopra, executive director of the artistic programs at the Lower Manhattan Cultural Center, stops by to talk about the 18th annual River to River Festival, the completely free summer arts festival happening this week and featuring artists, including Yoko Ono. More after the break. Stay with us.